Hello, you're listening to Spoiler
Filled
film.
Conversation.
Hooray!
So, guys, I'm Richard Nicholas. Oh, you guys know that. I don't need to tell you. But for the listener, I'm Richard Nicholas. Hello, listener. You all right? Oh, well, suit yourself. But with me for the podcast today is Jamie Thomas.
Bonjour.
Ooh. And Abigail Bain. And we, as always, are here to chat about a film for no one's benefit but our own. And that film is A Town Called Panic. I picked it, but I do not like to read IMDb aloud, so I will pass that task over to one of you, so you may read the details to confirm that the film we picked is what we said it was.
This week we're doing A Town Called Panic from 2009. It was directed by Stéphane Aubier and Vincent Pittard, written by Stéphane Aubier and Vincent Pittard, starring Stéphane Aubier, Jean Balibar, Nicolas Boissy, Véronique Dumont, Bruce Ellison, and some more people. I will also say, I don't know who did the voice of a horse. Vincent
There we go. He
Pittard.
was missing from your, like, you said their name so many times and then you missed him off the list. And I was like, really? He didn't do any voice
Yeah,
acting?
it was just, I'll just take a back seat on this one, guys.
I'll write, I'll direct, and I'll animate little figures, but I will not say the voices myself.
It's because it was in alphabetical order.
Yeah.
No.
Well, thank you, Abby. So I guess I should explain why I picked this. And I figured we needed a bit more culture in our lives, and we don't do foreign films very often because, reading subtitles. What am I? Some kind of intellectual, la-di-da, schooled, education-y man? No, I'm not, and I won't read. Not while watching a film. Anyway, you get my point. We don't do enough subtitled films, and I like animations, so I plucked one I liked from the past. Well, from 2009. I just thought it was weird and funny, and that's why I picked it, I guess. Had you guys heard of this film or these creators before, Abby?
Only via the Cravendale adverts, like most people. I didn't know anything about them other than that.
Yeah, they had like an animated, similar version to the characters from this film, but like a pirate and a cyclist, and they messed around and tried to create milk or steal milk or something. For the adverts. Have you seen that advert or know anything about this stuff, Jimmy?
I remember the adverts. I didn't realize it was related to this particularly.
Well, it's the same style almost exactly, so.
Is it that they got the guys to do the advert, or is it that some marketing team saw this and thought, oh, great, and just stole it?
Oh, I don't know what came first, but I think the guys who made the adverts were the same as they made the film and the TV series, A Town Called Panic. I didn't check my facts, but I'm pretty sure. I mean, what are the Belgians going to do? Eat waffles? They're not going to sue us. They don't know how to pick up a lawsuit, man.
Apparently it was the creators of the show were commissioned to do the Cravendale advert.
See, I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess the adverts were fairly famous. I don't know where they've been on. They were in Britain anyway, and they were just kind of, little plasticky toy figures kind of screaming and shouting and messing around, and that's kind of what the film is and the TV series it was like related to or part of or whatever it was. But you guys hadn't seen this before or what?
I'd really vaguely heard of it. Like the title sounded familiar. And I think probably because was it the Cannes Film Festival where it won an award, or did it win a it won something.
Yeah.
It was submitted for Cannes, but it didn't win, I don't think. It won something else, the Cinemi?
Okay.
Cin something.
I remember it, like.
It went down well.
Yeah, it got some recognition, and it got like spoken about in film circles on the internet, which is all I ever read. So,
Some kind of film snob who only takes Cannes' word for something if he's any good.
yeah. Yeah.
What do they know? They award things to just stories about cowboys who want to kiss each other.
It took me a second to remember what you were talking about.
Yeah, I, for a minute I thought that was a reference to this, and I thought, what? I don't remember.
Oh,
that.
No, yeah. No, there's no... I mean, let's talk about the characters a bit then, because one of them is a cowboy, and they live in the same house with a horse. It's an Indian, a cowboy, and a horse living in a house, but they sleep separately, all of the chaps. So, there's no hanky panky unless there's subtext I'm not understanding. I don't know.
I think it's more like the Indian and the cowboy are children.
Almost.
It's some kind of not really wanting to be the adult.
Yeah. He's a ipso facto father guardian figure somehow over these two adult men who I don't know if a job is being an Indian and a cowboy, but you know. But no, you can't take Cannes' word on if anything's good or not, just as you can't take the word of the Oscars. You've got to go to fans of films who make rubbish podcasts and put it up on the internet. They're the people who know about films that you can't trust the opinion of.
Never mind the awards it's won. This is what we'll get at the recognition it deserves.
That's right. Obscure podcasts are the only place to get... No, that's not even true. Just this obscure podcast. No, but generally speaking, I throw out any award something gets doesn't mean anything to me personally, so I tend to just ignore anything that gets a claim. But I found this just through sheer liking animation, and I was doing illustration in university at the time, so it got in that way. And I was like, oh, this is awesome, and yet I'm not sure I fully understand it as a plot or idea. How did you guys get on?
I think you just go with the flow. Like, you don't... this isn't something you're coming into expecting anything particularly intricate. It can be kind of hard to keep up with, though. You have to, like, pay attention.
Yeah, because you're reading along, usually. I think there are, I think the 5-minute TV series episodes, some of them might be dubbed in English on YouTube and stuff, but this was subtitled, but they got amazing voices. Like, the fact that they speak French is not a problem because they shout all the dialogue and, like, have a really funny way of doing it all. So it's almost you're missing out by not being able to hear it and understand it, but you get the gist of what the characters are like.
I think it's also, stuff happens so quickly that if you look away for a second and look back, suddenly everything's completely different and you have no idea what's happening.
They've somehow managed to capture anarchy and almost cage it, but not, because it's anarchy. Like, it's anarchy personified as a short animated film. Not a short animated film, it's like a full film, but it's quite surreal and weird. But it does start off pretty reasonably. Like, the first 30 minutes, it's a silly plot, but you can follow it. There's like a turning point where you go, okay, I'm with you, we're understanding their lives, even though they're weird, but then it just goes mad. It just goes off. Woo, woo, pie, by any sense and direction we had as a plot.
It starts off with, it's horse's birthday, and the Indian and cowboy have forgotten. So they decide to build him a barbecue, and they accidentally order 50 million bricks. Which they build the barbecue, and the way they hide the bricks is they stack them on top of the house, which then causes the house to collapse, and then they have to rebuild the house. And every time they try and rebuild the house, somebody's stealing the new walls. And it turns out it's these fish men from underneath the... And it's just like... Yeah. Once they get to the point where they discover who's stealing their walls and they suddenly fall to the center of the earth, that's when it just goes...
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
The only way I can think that they wrote it is... You remember, actually, this might be a bit of a girl thing, but you used to write stories where you'd write a bit of the story, then you'd fold over the piece of paper and pass it on to the next person. So they didn't know what was there except for the last couple of words. And then they'd write something, fold it over, and they'd pass it on to the next person.
So you get just
that's how this was made.
Disjointed, story that makes no sense. Like, we did that with comic strips in college as well. We would just draw a frame, pass it on, get the next person to do one. And it creates this just surreal, weird plot that's... You know, you can follow it, but you don't understand when it's why it suddenly goes, we've lost all interest in this. We're off doing this now.
That's kind of what's charming about it, though, is there's that, I'm bored with that now. I'm going to start doing this. Yeah. Like, are we going to introduce piano lessons? Oh, that's rubbish. Let's carry on. Drop it in every now and then.
It does call back to the piano lessons the horse is having. Let's talk about the characters and the sort of look of it a bit, and then we'll try and fathom where they went with the plot. Because you mentioned the brick thing. That's kind of a pivotal moment, a pivotal joke to the story. But basically, the world they live in is, like, they've painstakingly recreated plastic cheap toy figures, because they're animated, so they're not like they've animated toys, they must have made the models.
Yeah, because they're flexible in a lot of ways that toys like that wouldn't normally be.
But they're made to look like cheap plastic molded, like farmyard and character toys that they must have, you know, had in their childhood or something. And they have, one of the main characters, they have a cowboy who's really loud, like, they're all quite loud a lot of the time, they shout a lot. Like some, and occasionally talk quietly to each other, but mostly just everything is an exclamation mark with them. But it's, cowboy's kind of high pitched and shrieky, and he's quite childish. Would you say?
I would say they're both reasonably childish.
Both Indian and cowboy.
Yeah, they're a great sort of couple of idiots.
They are,
which is, you know, endearing. You know, that's why characters like Beavis and Butthead last a lifetime.
And they got the horse figure there to kind of undermine them, just because he is a horse and he's in charge of you two idiots. You know, it kind of just highlights how silly they are as a pair. And nothing is explained, really. Like, there's a horse, a cowboy and an Indian living in a little yellow house in the middle of the French or Belgium or nowhere in particular countryside in this little plastic toy land. And they live next door to a farmer called Steve. Is that right?
Steven.
I love when they say his name all the time as well. So funny. And just some of the lines are just the fact that they're shouting certain words out is quite funny.
I don't know if part of that is just like me being really juvenile in it, finding it really funny to hear people talk loud and rapidly in a language I don't speak. Like, maybe that's just me.
Maybe all Belgian cinema is the same. Maybe this is a textbook example, or
they can't make serious films. It just doesn't happen because they talk funny.
It's all of my favourite foreign films, I think, have a certain amount of shouting and talking too fast. Different languages as well. It's something endearing, shouting and talking too fast.
I like the idea that in, like, Belgium soap opera, they're just like, ah, Stephen, where are you going? Ah, yeah. I'm going to get the eggs from the shop. Don't. The child abuse. Ah, what? Like, just some terrible dark drama or something. And it's just
but all done in this rapid style.
Yeah. Ah, it's the detective. What's happened? It's a homicide. Ah. Like, it's kind of amazing. But, so there's Stephen, the farmer, and his wife. What's his wife's name? Janine? And she's a rather nice, doting wife, and Stephen's just kind of... He's the shoutiest, Stephen, the farmer. He's obsessed with his little red tractor, or big one, or, you know, he's small, isn't he? So his tractor's quite big. But and then that's basically where they live. There's a few cows and other animals about. And, I mean, there's other characters we'll probably get to if we talk about the plot. So, but they all live in this bit. There's a policeman who's sort of a traffic policeman who lives in a little hut thing for no reason, and
that has a spring-loaded prison underneath it.
Yeah, that's a fair point. He does have that there, just in case you need to arrest someone when they're guilty of the crime of stealing walls. Cheval! Funny. I'm trying to remember some of the lines. We were having fun quoting the lines, and now we're...
There's a translation. They've translated exactly two lines on IMDb.
Go on.
And they are... Have you seen the state of my tractor? Come on, animals! And eats two pieces of toast, each covering an entire table, whilst levitating upside down. Delicious toast! Smashes through a giant coffee cup. Excellent coffee!
Oh, that was my favourite scene of the film.
It is amazing. Like, there's not a lot of like playing with the scale of things jokes. I mean, there's all of the objects in their world are kind of oddly created, like as if children have made a playset so everything fits their characters. But some things are slightly larger or weird and quirky. But then every now and again, some things like regular scale to like a toy, like the toast gag. I mean, do you want to say what you like about it? Because it's an amazing bit.
It was because up until that point, everything had been to scale.
More or less,
and then
yeah.
Suddenly, there's a full-sized, like, human piece of toast in the kitchen that she, like, puts, I guess, is, like, some kind of Nutella spread over, and then pours a normal-sized, like, carafe of coffee into a normal-sized mug, and Stephen just races in, eats the piece of toast, like, yeah, levitating upside down, destroys it, and then just runs through the coffee cup, and the coffee's just gone, because he's eliminated it, he's absorbed it as he's gone through the cup. And it was so, like, there was a little bit of build-up as well, because you see, there's like, a little quiet moment where she's, like, spreading the stuff on the toast, and you're not quite sure what's going on.
It's just, and then it's back to the, like, it's a weird plot, and that's a weird bit, but then it's back to the what we were doing anyway.
Yeah.
Like, it's you can kind of make sense of it to some degree. Once you understand their universe, you get into it, and you're like, okay, so the horse is having a birthday. Cowboy and Indian are a bit tup, or silly or stupid, whichever non-colloquial word it is for tup, but they're a bit weird and silly. And, like, they're kind of, like, dopey children, even though they're presumably adults. And they've forgotten it's his birthday. And so they, like, oh, we'll make him a barbecue. Fair enough. I guess a horse would want a barbecue. No, let's not worry about that. And they have to, you know, go, oh, we'll order the bricks and make it today while he's at his music lesson. Because, you know, horses play pianos on the... But they have lowered keys on a... Yeah, it's weird. There's like a music school, isn't there?
Yeah, for animals.
Yes.
Something.
And that's where they introduce a few of their other main characters, well, their other characters, is like, there's the horse that the, our horse, Chevelle, I guess we should call him, because that's the Belgium or French for the Belgium. like, that's a language. like, Chevelle the horse, or horse the horse, fancies the music teacher who, you know, fair enough, she's at least she's a horse. I mean, they've made sense in that regard.
Yeah.
And we don't know if maybe he's taking the music lessons because he fancies her, but, you know, he's interested in music lessons where all the other animals learn.
Yeah, I think that's what it was, is he did it, because she signs him up for 50 lessons, and then he's like, sign me up, Simon, who's the other character, sign me up for 100.
Yeah, so... We get that he has a love interest, he's having piano lessons, and he has two housemates who are trying to buy him some bricks to make a barbecue for his birthday. And that's another... You mentioned Simon, and it's like, yeah, Simon's an interesting character that I think was in the TV show as well. But he's just this sort of normal guy who runs the reception, or has this weird... Like, he's also has this... Does he, like, play this weird, like,
big
piano
circular thing? Piano thing, yeah. He's in, like, a lowered platform, and then all around him are piano keys.
Yeah. Just, you know, because it's a music school. Okay. It's, that one thing that made me think of is because of the 2014 Eurovision, there was, like, one of the prop thingies they had was a big circular all the way around keyboard, but it didn't really work. Shabby. And then this, I mean, it's not a real piano, but they at least pretended it was real. Actually, they both pretended it was real, but... In their reality,
but in Simon,
it's real.
But in A Town Called Panic, Simon pretends well. The guys on Eurovision didn't even try.
Shabby. That's just an incidental lost... Like, that's a meaningless thing to say now. Watch the 2014 Eurovision. 5 people. And a few of them were paid to do it, so... anyway, the music school is sort of a side plot, right? And there's a lot of funny comedy that's done there. Does anyone want to talk about some of the elements of that bit of the story before I plow on just to try to describe the whole thing?
I quite like the donkey obnoxiously playing drums and having him told off.
Yeah, every now and again they'd have kind of jokes in there that are just more about how people are and less about how mad are we being.
Yeah, because that's quite like anyone who's sort of being in a band knows what a drummer's like, particularly when you're all standing around talking and suddenly he just starts playing the drums and you're like, shut up, what are you doing?
That was quite realistic. There's lots of times where it kind of could have been a traditional sitcom. It's a bit odd that they're toy animals and people, but fundamentally it's like a sitcom idea, a flat full of quirky housemates trying to, you know, do normal things like go to school and, you know, drive a tractor that's not theirs. But yeah, we have that going on. And so the brick thing you mentioned, which is like they're trying to order like 50 bricks to build a barbecue, and they put the cup down on the keyboard, and it makes loads of zeros, and they click send, and ha ha ha, they have ordered like 5 million bricks or whatever. But it's like at that point, because it's been not normal, but it's been reasonable. It really, like, you get a sense of the kind of tone of this, where it's like loads of these trucks keep turning up, and they literally have like every pallet of bricks delivered, like all 50 million of them.
Yeah,
and it's quite funny humor again. Like the funny humor comes in where, like, Cowboy and the Indian are arguing about who's going to sign for the bricks, like trying to take responsibility suddenly and stuff. Oh,
they're endlessly petty as people. I haven't really seen that kind of pettiness in something like Bottom. I don't think. Where they're just constantly trying to do each other over in one way or another.
It's the same kind of violent slapstick as well, where it's just, like, because they're sort of cartoon characters, they can do a lot more weird stuff, and like they kind of get bashed and thrown about a lot throughout the whole thing, and like there's a sense that they're kind of invulnerable, but at the same time can feel pain, shame, humiliation and things. Yes. But
yeah.
Go on.
I was just going to say, like, there's no, like, it's quite easy watching because there's no peril. Like, nobody's going to die until there's that bit where they almost go to the center of the earth.
Mm.
Like, that's the only scene, because they do seem to be pretty much invulnerable. Like, with the bit later on when they're underwater for a very long time. And
yeah.
They have snorkels on, so it's fine, even though a snorkel
doesn't work. Not how snorkels work.
Yeah. But it's just that sort of, who cares, attitude all the way through. But because it's consistent, you never question it, necessarily. You don't sit there going, what? Where's the logic?
And it is, that like, that moment later on when they're plummeting on a rock, like, to the centre of somewhere or other, and there's potentially like lava-based death, which is the best kind of death in my view. But they have that weird moment where they go, "Oh, is Cowboy dead? Because only his boots are here. Did he plunge into the lava?" And obviously, it's we tricked you. He's just higher up on a rock, kind of thing. But it's like it kind of plays that, like, "Oh, maybe he did die," and it's all a bit sad. But most of the time, they can get squashed and bashed about, and like there's one point where they kind of explode into the sky, and they like land and bury their heads in the ground, and they just stay there like vertically in the ground sleeping through the night until the next day, where they wake up and come to and realize like their house is ruined with all these bricks that they stacked up hidden out of the way and stuff. So it really, like, it obeys no rules really, but yet it does seem to have it seems to do comedy in a nice variety of ways, which I like about it.
It's that kind of, it sounds like an odd thing to say, but it's that kind of height of slapstick, because
they've gone all in.
Yeah. And it's so, like, the timing is so good of everything. Like everything stupid that happens at exactly the right time, at exactly the right speed.
Yeah. Like, it's either, like, they either slow it down and have everything, like, freeze in the air. Like, sometimes there's, like, a big crash and a slam, and they'll just levitate all the furniture up from the impact and then have it drop down all of a sudden. And, like, they really play with the fact that, well, we've stop-animated this, so you can really have some fun with it. And, it's just really creative. Lots of the things they design and the gags they engineer are all done in a really creative way, whether it's the props they use or the idea of how to show it to us, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, so like the brick thing is the pivotal moment, because they have Chevelle's birthday, all his friends and stuff come around, and they have a kind of little party. They have like I think Simon does like a disco for them all, and they're dancing, and they kind of get a bit drunk as well. It suddenly goes up and is a bit more adult suddenly.
Yeah, it does that a couple of times, because there's a couple of like swear words thrown into the dialogue a couple of times as well, and you're like, does that matter?
I laughed so hard the first time they dropped the B word in there, like the B to the D word, just to clarify. And it was just like, like, I really laughed at it, because you're just not expecting it from what you essentially feel is some kind of silly kids show.
Yeah.
But it's not in it like in a. It's not done vulgarly. It's just done for occasionally. It's the right use, and it's kind of funny. Would you guys agree?
Yeah, that's the thing about it. It is exactly what you would say in that situation.
when someone has been that is the right time. I think the whole party goes on with these like, bricks stacked up on their little yellow house, and then like as everyone's leaving, and they have like it's quite a normal party in a sense. Everyone's sort of reacting like drunks are behaving like drunks. There's relationship tangents being developed slightly. I think that all goes a bit pear-shaped. There's a bit of a falling out with the farmer and, like, I don't know. It's just, it goes like a regular party. It goes a bit sour. But the party ends, and then it picks up where it left off with the whole brick debacle and, like, kind of plays it for the joke and, like, you know, and gets all silly again. And suddenly it's about cowboy and Indian and horse dealing with this problem of having a demolished house with bricks everywhere. And then, this is the moment where they start living in Stephen's barn because he's nice like that. And then from that point on, the story becomes about who is stealing the walls we're rebuilding. Turns out it's the Aquamen who live in the lake that we've not referenced once in the whole film. And they go into like an underwater world and they end up in a snow world. Yeah, and in the snow world, there's a giant penguin robot with scientists in that are creating some kind of penguin that can throw the ultimate snowball anywhere in the world.
Yeah, that was when the film, like, I kind of, not in a bad way, not in like a negative way, just in a sheer bewildered, what is happening now? Like, they fall to the center of the earth and then they manage to escape. How did they escape the center of the earth?
Well, the rock got stuck. They play cards on the falling rock for a while, with the weird like Aquaman who's not
Gerard.
There's a few of them, but the one they've managed to corner Gerard. They're just sort of little green men with pointy heads and weird snorkels and flippers on their heads, aren't they?
Yeah.
They play cards with him while they just do little jokes on the way down, and then. They fake Cowboy's death for us, and the way they do it as well is just they reveal it by having a phone call on a mobile come through and be like,
"Yeah,
oh, who's that? It's Cowboy." Like what?
His horse finds Cowboy's gun and says, "Indian, this is yours now. Look after it." And Indian, despite being sad, suddenly goes mental. He's like, "Yeah, I got a gun." And then his mobile goes off and he picks it up and it's Cowboy saying, "Get off my gun," and he's just on the rock above them.
Yeah. And it's just this weird, like it tries to make it kind of, oh no, Cowboy might be dead as well before that. So it just messes with you. But you're right. It's like they just, like, I don't know. It makes no sense. Like the Aqua dude, like, gets away by tricking them to, like, get an arrow off them or something.
Yeah.
And they climb, they just get out of it, don't they? I don't really.
They climb, but they don't get all the way back up to where they started. They sort of reach an underground lair.
Yeah. Which is where they kind of find the world where the Aqua people live, and they live in a, like an upside down version of the house that belongs to the horse. And
how did they end up in this place with all the snow?
Well, how do they?
That's where the underground place came out of.
Right,
came out into rather.
Okay, because then there's a giant penguin machine.
Well, that's it. It makes no sense at this point. Just because they go from that, they go, oh, okay, we're going to have an Aqua world where these guys live. We don't know why it's down a massive cavern, but it is. And it is just literally. Oh, is it you saying the cavern is where they come out in the snow first? Or the
I'm
underwater?
Pretty sure the snow.
They fall to the centre of the earth. They climb up into catacombs, and the catacombs come out in the snow area.
Right. So how do they get from the snow to the water bit?
They get thrown by the penguin.
Oh
yeah,
this is why you can't remember, because when you come out of a hole and get to a snow level or whatever, you have a bit of debacle with like a massive penguin robot, and that's how weird it is. They get scooped up by that into a snowball and put in the metal penguin robot, where scientists are working on this for some reason.
But
as a side plot, the scientists in the metal penguin fight a mammoth as well, just to throw in for extra.
It's also the fact that the scientists aren't so much working on it as really childishly throwing giant snowballs at people all over, I would assume, the world.
Yeah.
Because they've got like a globe thing that they have, they hold a magnifying glass up to, and then they aim this giant snowballs with the penguin's huge robotic flipper.
Yeah.
And what am I even saying? Like, but it, like, and it's like, to describe it, it sounds terrible. Like, it just sounds like the stupidest thing. But it's so
charming, indeed.
Yeah, it is, and it like, and you just keep watching it because it's so, again, like the comic timing of all of it, and the way it's animated and the way the voice actors perform it, you just go with it, and you're like, okay,
ah, Cheval, come this way, ah, like, scientists,
and there's weird little, like drops of realism in there as well. There's a bit where they set up the penguin so that it's going to fire them back at the village. And then they're all climbing back into the snow for it to pick up the, like, them in the big, like, ladle thing to make the snowball. Mm. And then Gerard, like, makes an excuse to go back and, like, fiddle with it so he can get back to his home. And his excuse is, oh, I forgot my keys. And runs back up to the control panel to, like, change the trajectory.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, like, they'll have little pockets throughout where they'll just have more traditional funny moments from life in amongst what is essentially the most insane thing I've ever heard of. And it just, like, and then they get flung to the water area then, which is where Gerard lives. But it's the fact that there's three scientists who are doing this, which really petty, childish, bizarre activity. But they also beat up a mammoth who then, like, they beat him up like they're superheroes that can smash a mammoth in the face and send him flying. But they also, and they just look like normal scientists. I don't understand.
Yeah.
But then there's a little end to that where the mammoth eventually knocks their robot penguin snowball throwing thing into like a cavern. And it's like, yeah, right on, poor mammoth. Hang on, why is there a mammoth? Like, why are there Aquamen? It doesn't matter. We're with the Aqua people in the Upside Down house now. Forget all that. Move on. Yeah. That's the kind of attitude the film has.
Yeah.
What happens then in the aftermath of all this snowball debacle stuff?
They tell Gerard's mum that he stole the house that they're living in from them.
Mm.
And she tells Gerard off and tells him to give back the house.
I'm not sure if that's sincere.
I know, because she sends them to, he's like, okay, pick up the walls in the garage or something. And then they open the garage door and there's a load of piranhas in there. And they, like, horse and cowboy and Indian have to escape the piranhas while Gerard and his mum and the family laugh at them.
Yeah. So they kind of duped them into being attacked by piranhas. And aren't giving, like, it's not, what, did they not have a house before they stole the walls? Why didn't they steal the walls when they just had a house regular? Why would they wait until they were building it a second time? Why anything? Why film? Okay, there's no point asking why. That's what I'm realizing. It's just, it doesn't matter.
We also forgot to mention that in the meantime, in amongst all of this, Horse is getting continued phone calls from
the music school.
Yeah, the music teacher saying, come on, you're late for your lesson. And he's trying to be like, oh, I've run into a bit of trouble. I'll be there as soon as I can.
He's trying to play it cool and still look cool in front of the piano teacher and not get in trouble. And this anarchy must just be normal because he lives with cowboy and Indian and just this is his life.
Yeah.
So he's just trying to be normal about it and have this madcap adventure. At some point, there was a bear chase that I can't remember where it was, but it created quite a funny gag.
That was when they were, before they fall to the centre of the Earth, when they track down Gerard's footprints.
Ah, right, yeah.
And there's a little cabin underground, and there's a bell, and Indian insists on ringing the bell himself, and he does, and a bear comes out and chases him away.
I think the bear was a character in the TV series as well, from what I've seen. Okay. So the bear is like a thing they like to bring up and have chase people a lot. Like the postman we didn't mention as well. The postman who just goes up and down on his little bike, and he's an interesting but like underused character in it as well. But I think he might be in the TV series a bit more. I'm not sure.
He's the only bastion of normality in the whole thing. The only one who just sticks to his routine.
Just delivering letters. Yeah. Doesn't matter where or what's wrong. I just do it. But, so how do they get out of the whole wall aqua situation.
I can't remember because I'm not sure they if I had a seizure away. At that point.
They end up at the gift shop where they buy the pearl fountain, which they use to dupe the fishmen into going down a hole.
Yeah, don't gloss over how they dupe them because it's important.
And Horse is dressed as Santa Claus and says his sleigh crashed and their presents fell down the hole. And that's why they have to go down the hole, which they then plug up with a giant rock to trap the fishmen inside.
And they needed the pearl. I can't understand that. They bought a pearl fountain in a gift shop that is in it's like they... Bikini Bottom. They have like a big like deep sea diver shaped shop that sells gifts.
I think
pearl they, fountain, hats, hole, the, Santa.
I think they use the pearls to look like make it look like it's snowing outside.
Yes.
Oh.
And then yeah, once they like get back into the house, they saw the house from its foundations.
Yeah.
At which point it falls onto the ground and catches fire underwater.
Yeah. Classic SpongeBob territory we're in now, mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, what, they give up on that? Like, what? It's like, there's, do you know what? I could just pick random words and that would just as easily remind me what happened because it's so unconnected at this point. You just can't fathom it.
At that point, they find their way out and they come up out of the pond by Stephen's house.
Yeah.
And then the fishmen take over Stephen's house and they're like, well, you've destroyed our house. This is our house now. And then they basically wage war by throwing animals at each other.
Yeah, in the classic trope of comedy, having wild livestock like shot at you. They have like cow and possibly pig missiles that they pump into Stephen's house. And it's just like, okay. They yeah. And then what? But I honestly, I can remember it of sorts, but I honestly can't connect one bit to the other. You know?
Yeah, that's the thing is, like, you can't.
You just can't.
Yeah, you can't describe it. Like, at no point, surely, did they go in and pitch the plot for this.
Yeah, so we were thinking the classic boy meets Indian, meets horse, lives together. Makes a barbecue, it goes all wrong, Aquaman steal their walls, they, you know, stop the Aquaman involving the robot penguin, and, you know, like, it's just, you couldn't describe the intricate details, like, I guess at this point in the script, we should have them fire livestock at the house, and then when that plugs up all the holes, you're like, what?
Yeah, that's, like, suddenly the water, like, explodes from underneath and floods everything.
Yeah.
And the wave that was actually another one of my favourite like bits that actually made me laugh out loud was when it's back at the music school and they're all like getting on with their lessons and Simon's cleaning the windows and he sees the tidal wave out the window and he sees the horse in it and he turns around and he says, oh, horse is here. And they just crash through the window. That was great.
Yeah, it was. And it's just that weird way in which all of these characters are so used to the surrealness, they can just be casual occasionally, and then other times they're just ecstatically like excited about it as well. So it's just all over the place and brilliant because of that. It's just you never know what kind of gag or joke or reaction anyone's going to have at any point. Like you get an idea of the tone. Like Horse has a certain characteristic; he's sort of slightly more serious, but then he kind of puts Horse in. He puts Cowboy and Indian in their place occasionally and get serious.
Yeah.
And just, they, you know, they have their own way of being, but you never know what's coming.
Yeah.
In terms of the joke or the plot, you know, like, it's amazing. And they kind of tie up the plot a little bit with the whole horse's relationship and the music lesson.
Yeah, it's the town's flattened by the tidal wave and they all go, oh no, the town's ruined. But then a cowboy and Indian find, it's all right, we found the broom, come on, let's clean up.
Cut to a year later, and that's enough. That's enough, apparently. Yeah. Apparently these people who've wasted our time and have got us invested in the story are going, oh, they just tidy it up, and a year later they're having another birthday party, and they just moved on. No! This was all about fixing their house because it was a mess, and now it's just, oh, we could just fix the town with a broom. Oh. Abby, did you feel let down by that, or just I've stopped trying to understand and care about it? I'm just following it on.
By that point, you're either with them or you're not.
Being let down by that would, like, feeling let down by a particularly an enthusiastic hallucination that you're experiencing as you lose your mind. Oh, that one wasn't as good as all the others.
I guess for me, it looks as if the whole film, they started off with a tangible idea and they continued animating without knowing what they were going to do next.
Yeah.
And played out any story they came up with and maybe came back to it different days and couldn't remember what they'd done already. So they just like went, I'm tired of this. Okay, 1 year later, they're having a birthday party. All the characters have returned for the party. Cheval's having another birthday. And like, they even kind of move on from that rather quickly as well. Like, the end doesn't really tie up the story anymore, really. Just
yeah, because the aqua people have a house now under the water and seem to be perfectly happy.
Yeah.
Everyone seems to be friends, even.
Yeah.
Which is good and positive for, like, a film to end that way, but at the same time, like, it's not relevant. It's the kind of, we don't know what happened in that year other than they tidied up a bit. Like, it's not even like 1 year later, ha, poignant thing, everyone's learned to be friends. No, it's just, let's continue with the anarchy. I think there's a bit where, like, Indian and Cowboy are pretending to be like two halves of a broken horse. No, not a horse.
A broken cow, yeah. Yeah. For no reason other than just spite, they steal Steven's tractor and ride off with it.
Yeah.
And then he halo jumps some cows out of the sky. And surrounds them and beats them up. And that has no relevance to anything. Because I, like, at that point it started, I was like, is this the start of another film? What's going on? Like, and then it's just, no.
They also had a bit of a plot with Stephen being arrested for stealing the walls because the policeman just came to the conclusion that it must have been him because he has, like, a thing for cutting metal after they tried chaining their walls down. And he's in jail for a bit of that and that weird box thing the traffic cop has. Yeah. But he gets freed and stuff. And, like, it's just, they didn't really do a story with it so much as they were in another different disjointed bit of it.
That was one of the most sincere bits of that for me, actually, was when Janine, is it?
Yeah.
When she was slamming on the door and screaming for Stephen. I was like,
genuinely upset that he's gone to prison.
Like, even though he's just a small shouting farmer, she loves him so much. She's heartbroken. And then when he comes out, he's just like, he just doesn't seem that, he seems kind of blasé and just, whatever, woman, come on.
We've got a farm to run.
Yeah. I admire him for that. Oh, well, there must have been other bits in the end. I'm forgetting.
It's just, the thing is, though, like, the way we've talked about it, it sounds like we're knocking it and we're, like, putting it down, but I'm really not, because it's just that there's no way to verbally describe it that makes it sound good.
Yeah.
You have to watch it.
It's just so funny and weird, and I really like the characters. I like the ideas they have. Yeah. Like, each of the characters, they're kind of, they're not quite one note, but they have a sort of thing that they do and a way they behave. But they're also funny the way they interact. I like how some things are just inexplicable. It doesn't matter why. They're this way, and they don't have reasons to do things. They just do those things and behave the way they do because that's who they are.
The weird thing is, I don't know if it comes from the performances or, like, and generally the interaction, but you genuinely feel that there's a history amongst all these characters. Well, like, really feel like, even though it doesn't really explore them in depth, if there is depth, like, they feel like characters.
They have known each other forever, and they will know each other forever.
Yeah.
Well, there are 20-ish, like, 5-minute episodes, so they have got a kind of backstory, I guess. But in the sense that, you know, 5 minutes of, we're winding up a cow this week and something strange has happened to us. Shamal, where's Indian? I don't know. It's just that kind of, what? Oh, that was 5 minutes already? Okay. Like, it's a similar vibe to, like, the episodes of The Magic Roundabout. You just watch and go, I don't know what that was about. But I'm glad I watched it.
That's kind of what this reminded me of, actually, was when we did Doodle and the Blue Cat, except this was significantly less disturbing.
Yes,
than The Magic Roundabout.
But this has a different sense of humour. What was The Doodle and the Blue Cat was British and properly like surreal borderline on the terrifying, whereas this is just so playfully anarchy and it's so playfully anarchistic and odd and just off the wall and kind of all kinds of humor jumbled together in this really nice style that's all really like they bounce around a lot and they're kind of like crudely animated but at the same time lovingly animated. It seems wrong to say crudely animated.
Yeah, it's kind like of. It's crudely in a way that, you know, it's obviously it's meant to be. It's not, you know,
they took time and effort to create it because they came up with so many lovely designs and bits and slapstick gags and stuff.
I would say on the in terms of the Magic Roundabout, I think, was it Eric Thompson who did the English dub?
I think so.
This, like, were he still alive, he could have done the same thing with this that he did with the Magic Roundabout, and it would have worked. It wouldn't have worked quite as well because of how good the voice actors are in this.
Oh, yeah.
But it would have still worked. Like, he could have done it.
You don't have the lips to sync up because they don't really, like, have moving lips. They have facial expressions, but they just jitter about, so it doesn't, yeah. You know, you don't need to worry about it. He could have, but like, that's the thing I like about it as well is the voice actors, at least the creators who did the Belgium, like, you know, the French version, like, do you call it the French version? They speak French, but they're Belgium, so.
I think it's French.
But in the French language version, they sound brilliant as the characters. I've heard the English dub on a couple of shorts, and they're good too. Like, they have Indian, I think, might be... Indian sounds American, and, like, cowboy sounds Liverpudlian, and, like, North English is the kind of voice they go for with horse. But each of them has quite a distinct voice in the, like, original version.
Yeah.
And they sound brilliant just the way they do it. So it conveys the text in a way that you can appreciate.
It's one of the benefits of it. It's one of the things that keeps you watching despite how insane it is the energy that they put into the characters.
Yeah. What do you think, Abby? Are there any, like, I guess we should move on to our final thoughts because we've kind of got to whatever the conclusion of the film was. I hesitate to call it an ending because it seems like it was more of an ongoing than an ending. Just the, you know, the DVD ends or whatever. It doesn't mean they're insaneness.
I think that's almost what they were going for with the ending as well, is that, like, this doesn't stop. This is just a snapshot of what's happening in this world.
What I was about to say was something similar, where I just feel like somebody has unzipped some fabric of the universe and peeped through the gap. And that's what they found. They watched it for a while, then zipped it back up again.
Yeah.
I never went back.
Yeah, it's kind of incredible. So I think we all liked it a load. Like, we just found it compelling and funny, right?
Yeah, again, like I said, it sounds like we're slating it in the way we're talking about the plot, but it's not. It's because it's so just completely mental, but so colourful and so full of, like, enthusiasm for itself. Like, it really seems like I can't imagine nobody there was anyone making this who didn't enjoy it.
I've never been so happy to be baffled in my life. And it just, like, there'd be little things, like, there's little visual gags that I missed the first time that I laughed at a lot in this, and I, like, it's, even though it's not in English, you could almost translate it and do it in the same way and still quote it the same way you would some of your favorite, like, English speaking films. You just, there's so many just funny lines that are just, you just remember, like, something weird that one of them said and you just laugh at the idea of it, or, you know, it's just so quaint and interesting and, like, it's just funny and mad, and I enjoyed it so much because it's not like anything else, really.
Yeah, no, it is. It's like, the only thing I could think of to even vaguely compare it to is the Magic Roundabout, but that's, like, a stretch. This is like completely unique.
I think it shares similarities with a kind of anime style, the slightly more mad capped, sorry, the slightly more mad and strange and surreal anime films. You know, like, the Japanese have this weird ability to do the crazy, strange, non-linked characters that go off on weird adventures a lot. So I think it's more kind of that neck of the woods, but it isn't exactly that either, you know?
Yeah.
The only thing... I can't think of anything to compare it to in terms of what it does, but I can think of... I'd compare it to how it makes you feel. And I can only imagine that it's what you felt like when you were a really little kid and you were discovering everything for the first time. This kind of bemusement at how, that's an incredibly tall man. Look, there's a dog. And there's something in the air. I don't know what it is, but it's amazing. That's what it feels like. But you're an adult.
Yeah, it's kind of like this was made by adults. So the fact that it comes across like something, it's like watching children play with toys and without being observed so that they don't know everyone's listening or watching them. And they're just playing and making the characters do whatever they want and they're making themselves laugh however they want.
Yeah, and it's like watching a couple of really intelligent kids cut loose with a bunch of toys. And
exactly.
Like really imaginative kids, but who aren't constrained by anything because they're not, you know, trying to do anything. They're just playing. So that it just goes all over the place, but to such imaginative extents that it's just, you could just sit there and watch and be like, where is this coming from?
The mind has been cracked open and spilt all over the floor. Like a kind of broken, what's the word I was looking for? Like, it just, like a
kaleidoscope?
Yeah, just a kaleidoscope has been cracked into a magic eight ball and has spilt the contents out. I don't know. It's just weird. And I think we have kind of come up with a rating system in the fact that we would all kind of agree. It's like intelligent children are uninhibitedly playing with their strange, like, characters and toys.
They found a bunch of mismatched toys that don't really have anything to do with each other, and they're just making up connections. And it's just,
it's that. That is what I would go with. But a thumbs up for A Town Called Panic, and I'm hoping I can get hold of the 5-minute TV series with English subtitles, if not the tub, because it would be awesome to have. I think I looked at their website. They seem to have some information, but it's quite sparse. It's like they had a few backstories to like the postman and like the cowboy and the Indian and all that. Just a little like CV blurb just to make you go, oh, so Stephen just inherited the farm from his parents, did he? And then they moved away and he carried on living there. Like, oh, right, didn't know that. Because they had no point to develop the characters in terms of their story.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. It's like they don't really delve into the characters, but you never feel like they need to because they're invested with so much character that you just accept that they are these characters and that they have a history and you don't really expect to be told anything else.
Yeah. So, you know, hopefully these filmmakers will make more. I think they have made a different animated film, but I hope there's more in the pipeline because if this is anything to go by, then they should definitely keep going with new stuff. Or even a sequel, that'd be amazing. There must be endless options for what you could do
That's the thing, is you don't really need to think, oh, well, we're kind of constrained by the story of the original, you know.
No, just have an egg land and they'll crack open the egg and inside will be, like, loads of pandas and the pandas will, like, breathe fire and who cares, you know, like, just do whatever you want and it'll be funny. Like, I don't know, but yeah, like, what, thumbs up all round?
Definitely. Yeah. If I had more thumbs, I'd use them.
Ah, it's a thumb! Ah, Shabbat! I don't know. Anyway, there we go. Film reviewed. Tick.
Yay!
Great.
Bye-bye, listener.